This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Last month, the top U.S. and NATO commander in Afghanistan submitted a confidential report to Defense Secretary Robert Gates. The Washington Post obtained a copy of that report and posted it on their website today. In the report, General Stanley McChrystal calls for more troops in Afghanistan to fight the insurgency there. And if he does not get them, he writes, the war will, quote, likely result in failure. There is a caveat. While the situation is serious, he writes, success is still achievable. So what is Afghanistan like today on the ground, and how would sending more troops change the equation there? We'll talk to two reporters who have spent a lot of time in Afghanistan reporting on the conflict, and we'll hear from a member of the team of advisors that helped draft the McChrystal report. We also want to hear from you. If you've been to Afghanistan, tell us, what do you think the rest of us need to know about the country, about the war there? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. You can send us email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Later on the opinion page, how the Cosby Show changed America, but first, Afghanistan. Joining us now from his home in Washington is Jonathan Landay, senior national security and intelligence correspondent for the McClatchy chain of newspapers. You can find a link to some of his most recent pieces from Afghanistan on our website at npr.org. Jonathan Landay, it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure.
I want to start by asking you to recap the battle you saw in Afghanistan recently that was the subject of an article you just published, a battle in which four U.S. Marines died. Can you just walk us through what happened that day?
Yeah, it was actually three U.S. Marines, U.S. Navy corpsmen, and nine Afghans, including the translator of the Marine commander who I was with. Basically, I was embedded with trainers, with American Marines and several Army soldiers whose job it is to train the Afghan military. And we were on a operation that was intended basically to restore government authority in a village on the Afghan-Pakistan, close to the Afghan-Pakistan border. With the understanding of the tribal elders who had several days earlier renounced the Taliban publicly on radio and accepted the authority of the local government. With that in mind, myself and about 100, it was about 100 Afghan troops and American trainers began basically walking up a valley at the head of which this village sat. And we basically walked into a trap. The insurgents, and I won't call them the Taliban because it's unclear exactly which group it was that staged this ambush, but they knew we were coming, were ready for us in advance, and as I said, had prepared a three-sided trap. They were on the north and south ridges that frame the valley, as well as inside the village, and above the village on the mountains to the east, close to the Pakistani border.
And in your newspaper account, you say that you had to wait more than an hour for air cover, for U.S. helicopters to arrive. What do you think happened?
Well, I was told that there were, afterwards, that there were a limited number of combat helicopters available, that they, the ones that were available were actually being used in an operation to the north of us, and that several of the pilots had actually been wounded during providing air cover to the troops to the north of us. But at the same time, I was also later told that, in fact, air power was available. It's constantly available. It's on standby. And I had been in a briefing with the American officers and Afghan commanders who were involved in this operation, at which they were assured that while there was no dedicated air cover for this operation, air power would be available within 5 minutes of a call. And in, at least by my watch, it took 80 minutes between the time the call, first call went out from the officers on the ground with whom I was attached and the time that the helicopters actually showed up.
And what is your sense from your reporting of what role the new rules to avoid civilian casualties might have had in the schedule of the air power?
Well, I don't know that it had anything to do with the time it took for air power to get to where we were, but it certainly was cited by people on the other end of the radio to whom the commanders I was with were talking when they were asking for high explosive artillery cover to suppress the fire of the insurgents. That was not forthcoming at all, as far as myself and other people who were there are concerned. Now, I've been told that the official timeline being produced by the Defense Department says that there were mortars that were provided, mortar fire that was provided by U.S. troops to the people the contingent I was with within 8 minutes of it being called in. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as the other people I was with are concerned, that mortar fire was non-existent. It did nothing, if it was in fact the forthcoming, did nothing to suppress the incredible volume of fire to which we're being subjected in this ambush.
Now, in a press
Machine gun
briefing,
fire. Yep.
the Pentagon spokesman Jeff Morrell said that actually the issue with the air cover, at least, was just about the distances and the terrain that have to be traveled in Afghanistan. He said, "My understanding of it, this is a quote, is that it's not quite as it has been reported. I think it did take some time for close air support to arrive in this case, but that is not a result of more restrictive conditions in which it can be used."
Well, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what I was saying. The fact is, though, that when it comes to just about everything in Afghanistan, whether it be U.S. troops, Afghan troops, resources, time, energy, it's all at a premium in Afghanistan and has been for quite a long time. And so the bottom line, it seemed to me, of everything that happened to the people I was with was a result of this lack of resources, the strain on American forces, the strain on Afghan forces, the lack of sufficient air power, and the lack of these new rules that you've been talking about, because quite frankly, they were imposed as a result of the fact that U.S. and NATO forces were over-relying on air power, were over-relying on the use of heavy artillery because they were short of manpower. And that over-reliance resulted in high civilian casualties, and those high civilian casualties were a boon to Taliban support and recruiting.
The unit you were embedded with, it was Marines training members of the Afghan army. What can you tell us about how that system has worked, how the Afghan army is doing, how they're equipped?
Well, there seem to me to be positive, very positive aspects of it, but also negative aspects as well. The positive aspects being that the rebuilding of the Afghan military is among the most successful efforts that the United States has been overseeing in Afghanistan since the 2001 intervention. The Afghan military is professional. They are very good fighters. They are effective as a combat force. The problem is that there aren't enough of them, as I said earlier, and that the military itself is plagued by some of the very same corruption problems that the government as a whole is plagued with. For instance, the Afghan lieutenant who led the Afghan unit that I was with had been a lieutenant for 6 years. And the evening before the operation, I had sat with him and talked about why this was. And he said, well, it was because he didn't have the money to buy a promotion. Well, that is a problem that appears to be across the entire Afghan military. Then there's the problem of, for instance, the provision of food. Up to about 3 years ago, the United States had contracted for the provision of food to the Afghan military. And then, in an effort to increase the Afghan military's self-reliance, they did away with that effort and basically turned it over to the Afghan military to send money to their units in the field with which to buy food locally. Well, that money, as far as the unit I was with, has been blocked. And one of their senior officers had to go to Kabul to the Ministry of Defense to find out why the money for his troops to buy their food was not forthcoming. And so, there are these problems that affect the Afghan military, that affect morale. And I think the United States at the moment is trying to address all of that, but it's a huge job.
And assuming that you can't take on the entire enormity of that job at once, and you have to bite off piece by piece, where's the best place to start in your mind?
Well, it's hard to say because, after all, years have been squandered on Afghanistan. You know, it was treated as the orphan child to the war in Iraq. It was under-resourced as General McChrystal's leaked plan talks about, and it is still suffering from that. There's a great deal of time that has been wasted. I think that, at least as far as this plan goes, it is the most comprehensive, the first really comprehensive strategy that I've seen coming out of the United States military to address the war in Afghanistan. And it is brutally frank about all of the problems that have occurred over the years and that still must be addressed in Afghanistan. That frankness is appears to be a breath of fresh air, quite frankly, after years of what the previous administration would talk about progress, but quite clearly that progress has not really been forthcoming. The Afghan army is the exit strategy, the major exit strategy for the United States and its allies from Afghanistan. And that's why, in fact, I embedded with the trainers and the Afghan unit I was with, because I wanted to get a sense of how well, how far this effort has gone. And as I said, there are some very positive points. One I left out. The fact is that the Afghan army is probably the most respected of all Afghan government institutions today. But nevertheless, it's too small. The question is, there's a major question as to whether or not General McChrystal can achieve the doubling of the Afghan army that he is calling for in his plan, because up till now, they've had serious problems recruiting.
Jonathan Landay is Senior National Security and Intelligence Correspondent for the McClatchy newspaper chain. He joined us from his home in Washington. Jonathan Landay, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We are talking about the situation on the ground in Afghanistan. Coming up, one of the members of General McChrystal's assessment team will join us, along with a foreign correspondent who's spent a lot of time there. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.